I want you to go ahead and open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter number 2, where we will pick up our story at verse 27 here in just a moment. Remember that we're looking at events that I believe took place in the first half of the 11th century BC, so in the first half of the 1000s BC. It's the tail end of the period of the judges. And so we have two judges that we're following at the same time. I believe they're born right around the same time, and both of them are placed under a Nazirite vow. One by God's direction, the other by his mother begging God for a child. So we're talking about Samson and Samuel. And so right now, we're looking at Samuel's story, where he was given over by his mother in fulfillment of her vow to the use of the high priest at the tabernacle at Shiloh. He's apparently been there ever since shortly after his third birthday. Now, Eli, who is the high priest, has got problems. He will be high priest for a period of 40 years when he dies at the age of 98. So that means he started as high priest around 58. And when he began as high priest, and it was the same time as the start of the Philistine oppression, he just doesn't seem to be on the ball of keeping things on the up and up for the people of Israel in their relationship with God. The biggest reason we know that is because his sons are horrendous. And so he is about to be called down by God over his sons. Now, Samuel's a little kid. Samson's a little kid. Now let's talk about Eli. Probably in his 60s, I'm guessing, whenever this story occurs. 1 Samuel 2:27. There came a man of God to Eli, don't know the prophet's name, said to him, "Thus says he who is, did I indeed reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt, subject to the house of Pharaoh?" These are all rhetorical. Of course he did. "Did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go to my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me?" This is about Aaron, the high priest, the very first high priest. And yes, the answer is yes, yes, yes. "I gave to the house of your father all my offerings by fire from the people of Israel." And that's not a rhetorical question. That's a statement of fact. All of the priests who officiated were to receive certain parts of the sacrifices they helped the people offer as their own personal use. But they also were to be eating of the tithes and the donated offerings. So that's the point that God is making. Why? Because the last thing we were hearing about Eli's sons is that they were extorting the people for choice pieces of meat before the sacrificial fat is even burned up. They're taking whatever cuts they want, raw, because they don't want them boiled, which apparently was the particular procedure at this time in history. Back to God. Verse 30, "Therefore he who is the God of Israel declares, I promised that your house and the house of your father should go in and out before me forever. But now he who is declares, far be it from me, for those who honor me I will honor, and those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed." Now, God had said that the house of Aaron would serve as priests perpetually. Eli is actually from the line of the youngest son of Aaron, from the line of Ithamar. The eldest surviving line was Eleazar. And we know that the Eleazar line had been in place when they went into Israel, into the Promised Land, and then for the next couple of high priests after that. But at some point, perhaps with Eli himself, the high priesthood shifted over to the Ithamar line. Well, it's not going to stay there. It's going to go back to the Eleazar line. Verse 31, behold, the days are coming when I will cut off your strength and the strength of your father's house so that there will not be an old man in your house. Now, that's specifically about Eli's family. The prediction is that in time, all of the serving members, male members of Eli's part of the Ithamar line will die earlier than expected. They may die in their 40s or 50s, maybe in their 60s. They won't be living into the 80s and 90s like they had been. Verse 33, the only one of whom I shall not cut off from my altar shall be spared to weep his eyes out, to grieve his heart, and all the descendants of your house shall die by the sword of men. So there'll be some people that will survive long enough to grieve over those that don't survive. And now we get the specifics about this dying by the sword bit. Verse 34, and this that shall come upon your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, shall be the sign to you. Both of them shall die on the same day. That prophecy is going to haunt Eli for the rest of his life, because he will die the same day that he is told that his two sons have died. Prediction, verse 35, I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall go in and out before my anointed forever. That appears to be a reference to the Zadok line. During the time of David, there will be two priests serving in the tabernacle, serving in the leadership positions within the Davidic kingdom. One will be from the tribe, or from the clan of Eleazar, a man by the name of Zadok. The other will be from the tribe of, or from the sub-tribe, the clan group of Ithamar. And so this is going to be sorted out eventually as to which line is legitimate to serve as high priest. Verse 36, and everyone who is left in your house shall come to implore him, that is the Eleazar line, the Zadok line, because he will be high priest, and he's in charge of the distribution of the tithe to priestly servants. Everyone who's left in your house shall come to implore him for a piece of silver or a loaf of bread, and shall say, please put me in one of the priest places that I may eat a morsel of bread. So that predicts that things are going to tighten up eventually to favor the Eleazar line of the Aaronic priesthood. Chapter 3. Now, the boy Samuel was ministering to he who is in the presence of Eli. Now, Samuel is from a Levitical line. So he is not a priest. He cannot offer sacrifices. That is not in his wheelhouse. It's not in his prerogatives. But he is a Levite, which allows him to walk around inside the tabernacle complex and do all sorts of supportive work for the priestly services. He is actually from the tribe subgroup of the Kohathites. The Kohathites had been charged back in the time of Moses with carrying and maintaining the holy furniture inside the tabernacle. And so it appears as if, because of that connection, Samuel is given some very intimate tasks to accomplish inside the tabernacle. But he's doing it under the watchful eye of Eli. Eli has become his guardian. Now, the tradition of the Jewish people in the first century of the Christian era, and this is recorded in the Antiquities of the Jews by Josephus, who was a priest himself, is that Samuel, when this story takes place, is about 12 years old. And that does seem to fit with the interaction that we're about to read. Very important bit of information in the second half of verse 1. The word of he who is was rare in those days. There was no frequent vision. So God was not on speaking terms with Eli. I mean, we just read earlier how God sent a prophet to deliver a message to Eli. Didn't even talk to him directly, just sent a prophet to tell him he had problems. So that is all going to change now. Samuel is about to become a prophet himself, getting direct communications on a regular basis from he who is. And this is how it occurred. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, so he is at the beginning stages of full failure of his eyesight. When he dies at the age of 98, he is going to be completely blind. Here, he is mostly blind. He does not function well. So he was lying down in his own place. Now, where does Eli sleep? We don't know. Somewhere probably in the complex. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of he who is, where the ark of God was. Now, don't think stone buildings when you hear the word temple here. The word temple is being used in the sense as the shrine building of God. So this is the tabernacle building, a tent structure draped over a three-sided, rigid latticework is the way I think best to describe it, that's covered in gold. This is the place where the Ark of God is located, back in the back section of it, the 10 by 10 by 10 cubit Holy of Holies. Now, in front of that Holy of Holies is the holy place where the priests do their work every single day. And in there is the altar of incense, the prayer altar. There is the table of the bread of God's presence, which is refreshed every week with new loaves and apparently new cups of wine. And then on the south side, there is the seven-branched lampstand made of gold. It's a stylized tree, an almond tree. It looks like it has almond blossoms on it that the lamps sit in. Originally, that lampstand was to be tended morning and evening by the priests and just kept burning all the time. But from what we're reading here, it seems as if it is allowed to go out after the last tending of the afternoon. And then it is reignited the next morning for worship services. So we're being told basically the story we're happening is happening before the seven-branched lampstand gutters out after a day's service. So we're talking about probably the middle of the night, but not the wee hours of the morning. Now, Samuel was lying down in that room at the front of the tabernacle. Now, why is he there? It's the period of the judges. And we know that in the period of the judges, people did as they saw fit. They made their own rules. And young Samuel has been given permission to hang out there since he has evidently the responsibility of opening up those curtains first thing in the morning to get things ready for priestly work inside that room. Now, what happens? Verse 4, he who is called Samuel. So Samuel is asleep. Possibly he's 12 years old. That's the impression given from the Jewish tradition. And he's awakened from his sleep, hearing his voice called. And he says that out loud, here I am. And then he ran to Eli, he ran to Eli, and said, here I am, you called me. So he hears a voice that he thinks sounds like Eli. So he runs to Eli where he knows Eli sleeps and says, what do you need? And remember, Eli's going to probably be in his later 60s at this time. I am guessing possibly he's starting to move into his early 70s if Samuel is about 12. But Eli says, I didn't call. I'll lie down again. You know, go back to bed. So he went and he lay down. Apparently goes back to sleep. He who is calls again, Samuel. And Samuel arose, went to Eli, and said, here I am, you called me. He said, I didn't call you, my son. Lie down again. Now, Samuel did not yet know he who is. And the word of he who is had not yet been revealed to him. Now, the author of this section of 1 Samuel is just wanting to make it clear that the great prophet Samuel that we all know was in touch with God and had such a wonderful relationship, and God spoke through him and to him. This is before any of that started. That's the point. This is when he was a kid and hadn't yet developed that intense, intimate relationship. So he goes back, lays back down, probably starts going back to sleep. He who is called Samuel again the third time. He arose, he went to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. It was then that Eli perceived that he who is was calling the boy. So it finally dawns on the high priest, who has a sketchy relationship with God. God doesn't really talk to him much anymore, except even through a prophet, and then it's to chew him out. He goes, it clicks with him. God's trying to talk to this boy. So Eli said to Samuel, go, lie down. If he calls you again, you shall say, speak, he who is, for your servant hears. So he gives him instructions. I think God's trying to talk to you. So if you hear this call again, it's not me, it's God. And you should address him with respect by his name and tell him you're ready to hear his message. So Samuel went, he lay down in his place. He who is came and stood, calling as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. And remember, Samuel's name means God has heard or God listens. And so Samuel said, speak, for your servant hears. So he's doing a little play on his own words. If God is speaking, I am listening. Then he who is said to Samuel, behold, I am about to do a thing in Israel at which the two ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. Meaning it will blow their ears off their head. It will just shock them. On that day, I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. And I declare to him that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God and he did not restrain them. So we're going back to what he'd already been told, Eli had been told, that because he wouldn't step in and deal with his problem sons, God will eventually have to come in and deal with it. And that is going to bring great stress and problems into this line, this Ithamar line. And people will die early in this family because Eli's just not, he's not toeing the line. Now, if we are correct in some of our chronological assumptions, this is not going to happen for another 32 years. I believe that Samuel will be 40 years old when this prophecy comes to pass. That is my conviction. Verse 14, therefore I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever. So Samuel is being told by God, I've got a problem with the high priest. I got a problem with his sons. And I am going to deadhead this line. I'm going to cut it off. I'm going to terminate the members of it early. Even if it does continue going on for a while, I am not going to let the people in it keep doing the things that has been done by this group. Now, it is, I think, implied that God is now going to start working with Samuel instead. Samuel lay until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of he who is. That's where I got that information that I referenced earlier. This seems to be a reference not just simply of the gate into the worship courtyard, but rather the flaps of the front of the tabernacle needing to be pulled back to allow the priests free access in and out of the holy place throughout the next day. That's his job. He gets up and takes care of that. And so Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. Of course he is. I mean, Eli is functioning as his guardian, and he has some form of respect for him, and he also has to deal with the sons of Eli, and he needs to treat them with due respect. But God just told him that he is upset with these guys, all three of them, and that there is going to be death and destruction down the line. How do you express that to Eli? So Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. And he said, here I am. And Eli said, what was it that he told you? Do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also if you hide anything from me of all that he told you. So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. So he told him about God dealing with the sons and executing them in the future and how there's going to be this judgment against the family line. Nothing new, really, to Eli. He knows about this. The shocking thing to me is that even at this juncture, with many years ahead, Eli doesn't take any steps to fix the problem. Perhaps that gives us some sense as to why God is so frustrated with him, is that Eli is a do-nothing high priest. Because he says back to Samuel, "It is he who is. Let him do what seems good to him." Not, "Man, this is so bad. I have to do something about my sons. Perhaps the Lord will accept my repentance at this state." No, that's not the tack that he takes. It is whatever. Whatever he wants to do, that's the way it'll happen. Que sera, sera. And then he goes on with his life for apparently the next almost three decades. This is where we'll finish up today. Verse 19, "And Samuel grew, and he who is with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, knew that Samuel was established as a prophet of he who is. And he who is appeared again at Shiloh, for he who is revealed himself to Samuel at Shiloh by the word of he who is." So from this moment, from the moment according to Jewish tradition, was the 12th year of Samuel's life, he functions as a prophet. God reveals things to him, talks to him, and the word gets out. And what happens? People are hungry and thirsty for the word of God. And so they start coming to Shiloh to talk, not to the high priest or the high priest's sons, but to Samuel and get information from him. Meanwhile, Samson is also growing up. And we'll return to his story next time we get into the word.